The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 757. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about leopards and lions, safaris and sundowners, bee eaters and chimpanzees, as we go to western Tanzania. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Tanzania. I'd like to welcome the show Jen Curran from globeandtribe.com, who's come to talk to us about Western Tanzania. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Chris. Happy to be here.
So first off, what is your relationship to Tanzania?
Probably my first contact with Tanzania was when I was at University of Wisconsin for my bachelor's degree. I actually studied African languages. Swahili was my first language that I studied there. So I'd always wanted to spend time in East Africa. And so I got to know Tanzania even before I went through the language. After getting my graduate degree in public health in New Orleans, I had a chance to travel there. And through my career in public health, before I started a travel agency, I spent about 16, 17 years working in epidemiology and various development projects all throughout Africa, but a lot in Tanzania and Kenya, as well as Southern Africa. So I've had a love affair with East Africa for many, many, almost going on 2 decades now.
Excellent. And therefore, we should also say two things. One is that globeandtribe.com that I mentioned is a site where you can book tours. And two, I should wish you karibu, or welcome.
Ah, thank you so much. Asante sana.
Nina sema kiswahili kidogo.
Ah, really? Very nice.
I said I speak a little Swahili, or I said something. Yes. I speak a little Swahili.
You actually said it in, like, it's usually Nina sema kiswahili, but you said nasema, which is like the shortened version, which is almost a little bit like what the cool kids say. So you are ahead of the game.
Well, thank you. Excellent.
Caught me off guard, though.
And why should someone go to Tanzania, but particularly Western Tanzania?
Tanzania is just, there's so many amazing things about Tanzania. The people are great. The culture is great. Not just the Swahili coast culture. Watu Wapwani, they call themselves. So the people of the water, people of the beach. But just Tanzanians in general, I think, are really kind and warm people. I know everyone says that every place I go, oh, the people were so great. But I've been to a lot of places where the country was amazing and people were fine, but they weren't super hospitable. So I feel like that's what everyone says. But I feel like Tanzanians are just, yeah, really warm, welcoming. Tanzania just has a breadth of natural wonders. It also has a lot of history, particularly on the coast, like Zanzibar has a lot of culture. I mean, Zanzibar passed hands around for a while and has great Omani culture. So there's just a lot in Tanzania. And in Western Tanzania, I often say, like, a lot of the places that I go, kind of places I specialize in, mainly because for work, I wasn't going to Paris for work. I was going to Chad and I was going to pretty remote areas. Western Tanzania, I would say one reason to go there is because not everyone's going there. So for me, that's kind of my shtick. That's something that's always appealed to me. And it's just a place where it's not full of tourists, but it just has amazing natural wonders that I think get lost in the big Serengeti, Ngorongoro, Tarangire area. The nature of the wildlife is incredible there. It's not full of other tourists. Mm-hmm. And really, in some of the places that I've been, particularly Katavi National Park, which I can talk more about, is just, it feels wild. Like, it feels like what it was like a century ago. Granted, you're staying in a fancy tent, which might not have been there 100 years ago, whatever, but you do feel when you're out there, it's this vast wilderness and you're kind of almost alone, which is pretty incredible. And it just feels so wild to me. It was one of the places that I've been. There's so few places, I think, in the world where you can really feel like, wow, I am remote. This is wild. And that, I think that's one of the reasons I think I love it so much.
Excellent. And you mentioned going to other countries like Chad and things like that. And I don't remember whether you've said already, but you were in epidemiology. So if Jen was going someplace, you probably didn't want to.
Yes. No, there's plenty of places where people are like, why would you go there? And I'm like, well, I had to go there. And I found I was determined in almost every single place I went to find what was incredible about it. And I'm not necessarily known for being an optimist, but that is something that I strive to do wherever I go, is I will find an incredible thing here. So
I would think epidemiology and optimism might be a poor combination. Then you end up saying things like, it'll go away magically, which not to get into politics, but may not end well. So,
that's another podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole different podcast that we're not doing on this show. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us, Jen?
I know that usually like the 1 to 2 week thing is ideal, but I think, as I heard you mention in another podcast, sometimes when you're going far away, a week just isn't going to cut it. But I do think that especially for Western Tanzania, if you are going to add it on to a larger itinerary, you could do it in a week, 10 days. That just doesn't really count the days getting there. But What I did, and I thought it was an incredible itinerary, was you could spend 3 to 4 days in Katavi National Park, which is southern western Tanzania. And then another 3 or 4 days, depending on how you split your week, in Mahale National Park. There's a couple of charter flights mm-hmm. that go, and they operate Mondays and Thursdays, just because it's pretty remote and it's not chock full of people. You can go Monday to Katavi and then Thursday go to Mahale and then fly back on Monday to Arusha, which is where you would fly in and out of. You can drive from Dar. It's probably about 20 hours if you're lucky and you're on good roads that haven't seen a lot of rain, or about 15 from Wanza. But it's a bit of a hike, and clearly you couldn't do that in a week.
And just to put a couple of those places on the map, when you say Dar, you're saying Dar es Salaam, and that's the way the cool kids say it. And then Mwanza is up on Lake Victoria. And so that's sort of central northern Tanzania. And then Arusha is the central entry point for a lot of the safaris into those game parks that you mentioned, into both Kilimanjaro, which we talked about on a recent episode, as well as Tarangire, Ngorongoro Crater, Lake Manyara, the Serengeti.
Right, correct. You can fly in or out of JRO, which is Kilimanjaro, and mm-hmm. it's about an hour drive to Arusha, which is the domestic airport that, yes, you would fly out of to go to any number of parks.
Okay. And then, to get way over to where you're talking about, a flight is going to be a lot quicker than a drive because you're all the way across the country. And Africa is a big place.
Yes. And it's a very long and probably strenuous drive if you're not used to doing that. But the flights are also, it's not just a direct flight. Even to go to Katavi, you have to at least, even if you're going directly there without picking or dropping off any other passengers at any other spots, you at least need to refuel once in a place called Tabora. So you stop, it's a cute little airport. They actually have a VIP lounge, a couple chairs in it. But it's a 3-hour flight, and with refueling, you're looking at maybe 3.5 hours with different stops and stuff from Arusha.
Cool. So you started us in Katavi. What are we going to see in Katavi?
Katavi National Park is actually one of my favorite hidden gems. It's actually the third largest park in terms of sheer size in Tanzania, but it is the least visited. I've read statistics that says it sees around 1,000 visitors a year. But I've actually looked at Tanapa, which is the Tanzanian parks, and I want to say most years it's probably in the low hundreds, to be fair. When I was there, which was in September, so mid-season, for 3 of my 4 days, I was the only tourist in the park. So I had the entire park almost to myself. The other time, there was one other female, she's actually another American girl, who had driven there from Arusha, and there were just two of us in the park. So it was pretty incredible. We had the whole place to ourselves, and it's a massive, massive park.
Well, and just for people who haven't been to Tanzania, and I've only been to some of the other parks that we're talking about, if I go to Ngorongoro, which is an amazing place, definitely go, cool place, feels like right out of either Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom or Kratz Creatures or whatever your generation's version of Africa looks like this place, but you're also going to run into traffic right in the park. When there's lions there, there's going to be a dozen different vehicles all around the lions. And so it is not a remote destination in the same way.
No, and I think the reason, one of the reasons to go to those places is because if you're like, I'm only going on one safari in my life, or it's my first one, or I'm bringing like a multi-generational trip, the density there is unparalleled.
Right. Right.
So you're going to see everything in short order, probably maybe within a day. But you're also seeing a lot of Land Rovers too. But right. here you will not. So we didn't see any of the only other people we saw were actually park rangers during that time. And they still have a ton of wildlife. I don't believe they have rhinos anymore. Those have been poached pretty significantly in all of Eastern Africa. But you have this massive park to yourself, and you're there mainly for the wildlife. But it's incredible. I think because of that, it does feel very wild. When you're just out in the bush, it's pretty incredible. And I did go on a walking safari, and a lot of the, I mean, I've been on probably 40 walking, so I mean, I can't even count anymore. And most of them are actually walking safaris. They're nature walks. I mean, like they are, but they're steering most people away from the big stuff.
I'm not going to walk up and pet a hippo, you're saying.
No, no, no. They will keep you very far away from the hippos. which is good. Low-hanging fruit sometimes, too, is you might do something stupid and you don't know if you're in that group. So it's just obviously a safe bet. But this particular walking safari was incredible. It was very wild. They didn't steer us away from things. We saw pride of lions on our walk. I mean, we didn't go right up to them, obviously. You have to stay your distance. But a lot of the times you don't see that sort of stuff on walking safaris. We walked right to one of the river bends first thing in the morning. And as we approached the river bend, obviously it's a very high and steep river bend, but there was probably 200 hippos that just came rushing out of the water. And it was one of the more incredible things that I've seen in terms of just sheer numbers of wildlife. So it was pretty incredible too.
Well, and you say obviously very high and steep. Obviously there is that to walk up to a river where there are things like crocodiles and hippos is ill-advised. And so you walked up to a river place where you could see down into the river.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Yes. At first we weren't super high up. And then once we got to another bend and we got a little bit closer, and luckily it was very steep. So the big fat hippos couldn't, as agile as they are for their size, they could not run up that riverbank.
Yeah. They run like 35 miles per hour or something like that when for short distances.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. And one guide, I think, told us that they're born mad.
Oh my gosh.
They're a little temperamental.
Yes. I've had a few run-ins with hippos and one of my bosses actually almost got run over by hippo, but that's for another story. A boss I didn't like.
But when you're a good distance from hippo, or when you're looking down on them, I just find them so fascinating and so fun to watch. I think they're telling hippo jokes, as far as I can tell, because they seem to be laughing from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, hippos are actually, they're incredible. And one thing about Katavi too, besides the fact that I saw these massive group of hippos just come tearing out of the water, but Katavi is actually known for its super herds of things.
Okay.
And one of them is the hippos. There are different mud holes that if you search for Katavi, one of the pictures you will find are these mud holes when it's super hot, just packed full of hippos on top of hippos. And I saw one of them, and it's just like this big mud pit. I mean, obviously it smells terrible, so you don't want to get too close, but just piles and piles of hippos. And you think you could count them like jelly beans in a jar, but there's no way it's possible. I mean, there are hundreds of them. And they also have super herds of buffalo, sometimes thousands, I've heard, but also super herds of elephants as well, which is pretty incredible to see.
So what is a typical day? You say walking safaris more common than the Land Rover safari there?
Not so much more common. Okay. I think just their walking safaris are some of the best I've ever been on.
Okay.
Because they don't shy away necessarily from actually seeing some of the big game, which is the strategy of a lot of places, I think. Although, to be fair, Zambia and Zimbabwe do have incredible walking safaris. But I'd find in general, you're going to get more of a nature walk. So I think that was one of the things that was so great about this particular spot.
So a nature walk where I'm going to be looking more at birds and safe things.
And dung. And here's what an elephant eats. Look, you can see their dung. or prints or something.
Got it. Okay.
Or they'll talk about different plants and stuff that are important to the ecosystem. And then you might see something far away. But this is proper walking safari, which is incredible. If that's your thing. Some people it's some people don't like to be that up close and personal. So obviously it's super safe. I mean, the guides are incredible there. It may not be for the first timer.
Well, and one question, because there's a variety in terms of walking safaris, as I understand, and I haven't been on a walking safari, in terms of whether your guide is carrying a rifle or just maybe a stick.
This is true, although I think a lot of that actually has to do with the reserve or the park that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
There are some places that you are not allowed, like in Botswana, you're not allowed to carry, at least, I mean, things are changing there, but you don't have rifles with you when you're going. So I think a lot of that also has to do with the park and their rules as well, to be on the safe side. If you have paying guests, obviously, or any guests, you don't want to have a bad run-in with an elephant or something like that. So my somewhat educated guess on that is that that may be particular to the rules of the park.
That seems likely. And Katavi, you do or do not have an armed guide?
I believe we did. Okay. Yeah, I do believe we did.
You're trying to remember among the 40 different walking tours you've done.
Yeah, no. I believe that we did. I think he had, I think he had a rifle, but he was not at all concerned. Actually, I did ask him when we were going up toward all the hippos, and I was a bit freaked out, probably because we got charged by hippos before. I was like, he knows how to use that, right? And because we had two rangers, and the guy's like, this guy's the best shot in Tanzania. I'm like, all right, he's my guy. He's coming with me. So yeah, I do believe he had a rifle, but he wasn't in any hurry to use it.
Well, and sometimes the biggest danger, sadly, for the rangers in Tanzania or any of these parks are poachers more than the animals.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure.
And what else are we going to do in Katavi?
To be fair, Katavi is mostly what you're going to see there is wildlife. Mm-hmm. If you are on your way to Katavi, everything that surrounds it is other parks, actually former game reserves, i.e. hunting reserves.
Sure.
If you're flying over from Tabora or whatever, you're like, oh, what are these? There's some farms scattered in there, but a lot of them are old hunting reserves.
Hmm.
So mainly you're going to Katavi for that. The hippos, we got the super herds of buffalo, the super herds of Elie, which are incredible to see. The bird life's pretty incredible there. When I went there, I'm kind of a big birder, since I had basically the park to myself. I was like, you know what? I would like to see, let's search out some of these, not the big five. Let's see. I'd love to see some birds. I'd love to see some turricos. I'd love to see this. I'd love to see that. And so my guide was incredible. He's like, last time I saw purple-crested turricos, they were over here. Let's go see if they're there. And they're a very shy bird. So we went there, we waited a few minutes, and there they were. And then just around the corner, we saw this huge flock of Bohm's bee eaters. And all bee eaters are amazing, but there are these tiny little green ones, and they're just the cutest little things. So we sat there for an hour watching them. One of the things that, if you want to go and see the big five, like I said, the rhino has been poached out from the area for a while. I don't believe they have any. You can see all that. Just coming from the airstrip, I saw a leopard just sitting in a tree. So you can see all of that stuff. But I do think the beauty of that place, because it's so wild, it's just everywhere you look, there's something different. But you have to be looking for it. You have to be looking for the mongoose and the turricos and stuff. And you will see it because it's just been a place that's just been wild forever.
We've talked about it before in the show, but for people who aren't familiar with the big five, it's not like they're the five biggest animals on in Africa or things. They're the five biggest animals that people liked to hunt previously. Well, some, I guess, still do. So we're talking about elephant, rhino, lion, cape buffalo, and leopard. And that isn't always what people would guess if you ask people to guess the five most interesting animals in Africa. But but that's what we mean when we talk about the big five, or sadly, in most places in Africa, the big four these days, because rhinos are in gross decline all over Africa and being hunted for the horn, which is not an aphrodisiac. So
but there's a lot of interesting things in the conservation world going on right now, but but you're right, it's just incredibly sad to when you go to some of these places and you hear about all that the rangers are doing to protect the rhinos. I mean, all of them, obviously, that's why they're there, but just the great lengths that they have to go to protect these creatures. And I've sent clients on safaris where they go and dehorn a rhino. And it's a very double-edged sword.
Somewhat controversial, but
yeah.
It may save the life of the rhino if it has no horn.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. In some places, like this was in South Africa, mm-hmm. where in some places like Kruger, they have a pretty porous border in the Mozambican side, but they're losing 600 rhinos a day or something incredible like that. So you have to do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what's a perfect day like in Katavi? Paint us a picture. I'm sleeping in.
You are. Okay. Well, then that's not a perfect day.
Not really, right? What time did I get up?
Well, it depends on the season, obviously.
Yep.
But I am not a morning person, but mm-hmm. I've been on safaris with, oh, where's so-and-so in the next tent over? Oh, they slept in. I'm like, I've never slept in the safari. I am not a morning person, but like 4 a.m., I am up running mm-hmm. on adrenaline, ready to go.
Like an hour before sunrise is pretty typical.
Yes. About an hour before sunrise, you can have some coffee, tea, maybe some rusks before you set out. Same thing with walking.
That's very African.
Sunrise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rusks are definitely South African, but I don't know if they, I think they probably have them in East Africa.
Which is a hard, dry biscuit.
It is really
only edible if dipped in coffee.
Yes. Soaked in coffee. Yes, soaked. Absolutely. But enough carbs to get you going in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you get up before sunrise, you have your nice kahawa, your coffee, and then you head out. And a lot of Eastern and Southern African safaris are different mm-hmm. in terms of when they go out, how long they stay out. It's pretty hot and dry there, as in many places.
Mm-hmm.
You're out for a few hours. If you're doing a game drive versus a walk, a lot of the times you can ask to have your breakfast out in the bush. So you'll go, you have a little game drive. And then you go to some incredible place overlooking the river where everything's mm-hmm. set up. Even if you're doing like not a super, super fancy safari, you often get that where they set up your little table and you can have a little bush breakfast, which is great. Sometimes you can walk back from those to the camp, or you go on another little game drive. Then you head back to the camp, obviously, for the hottest part of the day because it's hot and it's hot for everyone. So everybody is seeking shade at that moment. And you have a little siesta, a little Lala Salama, which is sleeping peacefully. A lot of places have pools. This place doesn't. It's pretty, even the nice places. I mean, there's only a couple places in the park, but Chata Katavi, which is part of the Nomad group, which is a really great group of camps. They have everything you need and nothing you don't.
In other words, you're not on a mobile safari. You're at a camp.
This one is an actual camp. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can do fly camping. I mean,
a camp has the wrong mental image is the problem that I hesitated on that. So
yeah.
Camp meaning that it is tents.
Tents, yeah.
But more
with a kind of a central mess area.
More permanent looking tents than me going out and pitching a pup tent.
Yeah. And you can do, I mean, in Katavi, you can do, there's one public campsite, I believe. So you can do self drives.
Okay.
And you can also, any place you go will help you set up a fly camping experience, which is just that. It's a ground tent someplace out in the bush for a night or two. So that's always pretty incredible experiences. I've done a lot of self drives. So for me, oftentimes you pay more for it because they have to mobilize so many things. But it is a credible experience for who kind of feel comfortable. And again, some people might not. But again, Katavi is a place that I would recommend, and Mahale as well, for not like your first safari. It would be for people who've been a couple of times and are like, I want to try something different. I want to go someplace where not all the crowds are, that I can kind of have a place to myself, where it's really wild. And then if you're fly camping in a place like that that's already pretty wild, you generally can have a pretty cool experience, I think, if that's your thing. You'd have your little siesta, you'd read a book, and then you'd have your tea and coffee in the afternoon, and then you go out for another afternoon game drive. But the best part of any safari, Chris, which you probably know, is the sundowners. So, which is actually a South African experience that mm-hmm. is like then actually moved all the way up to Eastern Africa as well. So, and it actually originated there. But the sundowner experience is one not to be missed, even if you aren't a drinker. It is still like, I do it everywhere I go, even if there's no sundowners and no one else is doing sundowners. I always make it a point to have a sundowner because it's you're saying farewell to the day.
And what is a sundowner?
With a gin and tonic.
Oh, there you go. Overlooking the plane.
Yeah. So it's essentially a cocktail or a beverage. If you're not a drinker, then just a beverage and some snacks maybe as you say farewell to the day, as you watch the sunset, preferably with a cold gin and tonic, watching some plains animals running around. But yes, it is a quintessential safari, an African experience. So that's probably the best part of the day. And then you have a little bit of a night safari. Night safaris are incredible. I think they're my favorite part. And head back for dinner and then get a nice snooze because you got another early morning.
Well, and we didn't say, but one of the reasons why you're doing those early mornings and those late night safaris too is different animals are active at different times. So if you see an animal, if you see a lion, for instance, at noon, what is that lion doing? Not much.
Yeah, he's snoozing. Yeah. Male lions, that's pretty much all they do anyways.
They're saving up their energy to defend their pride.
Yes, true. Sure. And so mate.
Female lions do all the work. Yes.
I'm sensing a theme here, but that's another podcast too. Yeah. So that's Katavi. I mean, again, it's you're there for experiencing the wildlife and just the wildness of the place, which is, I think, incredible, especially since it's kind of hard to find these days.
And your most surprising moment at Katavi? You've been on 40 safaris. What's your most memorable that you haven't mentioned already?
I think for me, it probably was just how wild it was. I mean, I think I've been on probably 100 safaris just because of my work in Africa. If you're there for a weekend and you're like, well, I can sit in my hotel and work and nobody wants to do that. Or I can go to see this incredible place and all these animals. So, and then again, having done a lot of self-drive and exploration on my own, not even at an actual camp where someone else is driving you, I think I was so surprised just by how wild it was. I mean, I think I go to a lot of remote places and I feel like it's still, even when you're like, okay, I am days from civilization. And then you can still see somebody in like a, well, I'll say Saints, like a Saints jersey someplace in the nearest town. And, and you wonder, you think like, oh, okay, the world is so wide, but it's not. And I think just the sheer wildness of the place was surprising to me. I knew it going in because that's why I wanted to go there. But I felt like, it really can't be that wild, right? It's a national park and people are going there on safari. And two, if it is, and it's so far away, and maybe there's a reason a lot of people don't go there. Maybe they don't have a lot of animals here. And those were both blown out of the water. One, again, it just feels very wild, like what it must have been like 100 years ago to go on safari, or maybe not that long ago, maybe 80 years ago to go on safari. And the diversity of species that I saw there, again, I was looking, but was incredible. I think for me, why are there only a couple hundred people who come here every year? It's just incredible. So that's probably my biggest surprise.
Do we want to move over to Mahale now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Excellent. Anything on the way out of Katavi over to Mahale that we want to mention?
No, it's just you're on a little charter circuit in flying. Again, you can drive as well, but that would be quite a difficult drive, I think. They are working on a pretty exciting, I think, conservation initiative where they're trying to create a corridor between Katavi and Mahale, a wildlife corridor. So there might be more options in the future of getting from point A to point B. But generally speaking, you're taking your little 8-seater Cessna, I think, from one place to the next. And in that circuit that a lot of these charters go, they're leaving from Arusha. They're stopping in different places to refuel or to drop supplies off at different towns or camps or whatever. The next stop is Mahale. So I would have done the work up front to get to Katavi, and then the next stop was Mahale.
And by the way, I asked Google Maps how to get from Katavi to Mahale, and it said no. Sorry.
No, there is no, you cannot go.
You cannot do that.
Yeah, actually, I'm trying to think. There's probably places that are completely impassable, even if there are actual roads that you could drive on. But that's interesting. I should probably have it actually take a look at that. But yeah, you could probably go on foot, but you gotta bring a lot of water. So when you get to Mahale, yeah, you take your little charter flight and a little airstrip. All these are little airstrips. And then the fun part starts because you have to go on take a boat on Lake Tanganyika for about an hour and a half, I think. And this cool big wooden boat just along the coast all the way south to get to Mahale National Park, where you have a couple, I think there's only two camps there now. But I do know, actually, while we were there, I saw people who were kayaking and setting up their tents along Lake Tanganyika. So that might be my next foray into the area, which seemed like kind of a cool trip. A charter flight and then an hour and a half boat ride. And the boat ride is absolutely spectacular. It's just some of the most amazing scenery I've ever seen to get to the camp. So it's pretty incredible. It sounds long, but you don't realize how long it is because it's just awe-inspiring.
Well, and we didn't say why yet you're going to Mahali, other than it's just the typical next spot. What makes Mahali different from Katavi?
The topography and geography is totally different. So Katavi is really flat. It's like super flat. Mm-hmm. And Mahali is in the mountains. So it's the forest, you're in the mountains, and it's right on the lake. So it's a very tropical feeling as well. So very, very different. And Mahali, a lot of people go to Mahali specifically for chimp trekking.
Yep.
It's one of the best places for chimpanzee trekking. You go there for the chimp trip, but then there's so many other things. Like I had a leopard in my banda, because they're open air banda. So if you say outside your banda is outside, which is your tent. Mm-hmm. And the birds were incredible. So there's so much there, but a lot of people specifically go for the chimp trekking because it's pretty incredible there.
And chimp trekking. So I'm going out to see the chimps, not like in the zoo. I don't know exactly where they're going to be. I may or may not find them. That's what trekking means, right?
Totally. It's very much like gorilla trekking, except mm-hmm. for obviously different the chimps. So yeah, every day you have, again, same thing with gorilla trekking. You have your trackers that will go out and mm-hmm. they kind of know where the families are and everything. Mm-hmm. So then you get up in the morning and sometimes you're like, okay, you can eat your breakfast. And then some other times, like, choke that coffee down. You got to go. And then you're running through the forest to find the family. Fun times.
And by the way, I was able to verify that there are no roads into Mahali, period. Which is why Google gave up is...
Okay, well, that's why.
You can only visit by boat.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense now. Yeah, because you don't see... There's a couple communities nearby you can see on the boat, and there's mm-hmm. nothing else. Hmm.
And again, we talked about the experience in Katavi significantly different in Mahali or very similar. It's just the different type of animals that I'm going to see in that schedule.
I think both topographically very mm-hmm. different, but obviously the animals as well. I don't believe they have forest elephants there, though I could be wrong, because if you go on the other side of Lake Tanganyika, you mm-hmm. often find forest elephants. So in the DRC Congo, but none that we could see. So chimp trekking is kind of the way to go, but also the Lake Tanganyika is pretty, I mean, I think it's a beautiful lake. So there are definitely water, I don't want to say water sports because there are like too many sports there, but water activities there. You're kayaking when you have downtime during the day when you're not chimp trekking. I mean, you can chimp trek every day that you're there. You don't have to, but if you're there, you should go. And similarly with gorillas, you have a limited amount of time that you can spend with any one family just to reduce exposure to zoonotic diseases and us passing them anything. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the day, you're in this gorgeous beach. There's your little pockets of beach throughout the eastern side of the lake. And you can go out kayaking. The boat that you come in on, the camp will take you out into the middle of the lake for afternoon swim. You can jump off. And actually, I was ready to jump off. I'm going, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to jump off. I'm going to schistosomiasis be damned. I'm going to jump off into Lake Tanganyika. And I study tropical medicine, so I'm acutely aware of the things that might get me. And then I went to jump off and I looked down and there's just like swarms. Actually, swarm isn't the right word for a group of jellyfish, but there's freshwater jellies. And I don't think they sting. That's what at least they told me. They didn't sting, but they're probably about the size of a little bit bigger than a baseball. And just, there were just swarms of them. So you jump in to like, I mean, obviously not everywhere. The whole lake isn't just filled with jellies, but you jump in and then you're just like jumping and there's jellyfish all up in your face and everything. And it's kind of cool because they don't, again, they didn't sting me and everyone said that they don't sting, but totally unexpected surprise that I didn't realize. And you just can cruise around the lake again, like kayak or boat. You do have to go out in the middle of the lake though, because to avoid the schistosomiasis, well, as best as you can, and the hippos, because they do have hippos as well that are lakeside.
Which is a parasitic worm that we don't want to get.
You do not want to get it, no. But if you do get it, there is treatment. So,
right.
But yeah, I've had it a couple times. So it's not something that you want to get if you can avoid it. But generally speaking, to quickly put on my epidemiology hat, it's more often near populated areas. So,
got it.
In general, if you're looking for a schisto-free area, that's what you should look for.
Hence the middle of the lake. Got it.
Yes, exactly.
And also, then the hippos and crocodiles or whatever wouldn't be feeding in the middle of the lake. Okay.
Exactly.
Anything else we want to talk about in Western Africa or with Mahali?
Well, I mean, I can talk about other places that are kind of in the same region in Tanzania. Mm-hmm. But as far as Mahale goes, so Mahale is, so there's two national parks. The one most people probably know of, Gombe, which is just north of Mahale. And that's like really famous because that's where Jane's famous chimp research was.
Right. Jane Goodall.
She spent a lot of time there. Yep. Jane Goodall. And so Mahale is just south of there. And they also have a lot of research that happens there as well. But it's a little bit of a respite from your dry, hot Tanzania, being at the lake. Like I said, the scenery is spectacular. I think it's second only in that part of the world to Virunga National Park, which is just, I mean, more beautiful than I have words for. And this area is probably a second to that.
Okay. And we do have another episode on that national park, which is in the DRC.
Yep. I listened to that. The other thing.
That reminds me that you mentioned it being hot. What time of year would you recommend going?
I would recommend probably during the dry season, which in Mahale and that part of Tanzania is from May to October. Wet season's November to April. It's amazing being in the rainforest when it's raining, but obviously that curbs some of your sightings and obviously can be difficult for transportation as well, getting around.
Okay, got it. And if I have more time than we talked about, you talking about this being a week to 10 day sort of itinerary, and I was in the region, any other places that you would recommend?
Yes. I mean, I think obviously not everyone has weeks upon weeks to go places, but if you can manage a longer trip and you're already in Tanzania, obviously there's a lot of people know about the Serengeti and Tarangire and Lake Manyara and Ngorongoro. A lot of places that I like to always point out to people that are, again, because for me, I kind of like the less touristy bits or just where fewer people have trodden, I should say. And I'm a big fan of Ruaha National Park and Salu, and those are more southern.
Okay. Those I had never even heard of. You've stumped me.
Yes, they are. I'm a big fan of Ruaha and also Salu. There's actually quite a few more visitors coming on kind of on the safari circuit, if you will, to Ruaha and Salu. There's some incredible camps there as well. And they're not as remote. And you're going to see other people there as well, because some people might not want to be the only person out in the park. That's just me. But you don't have the crowds of the Serengeti, but you're still seeing the same wildlife as well. And I actually love, but I am a birder. So I'm one of those birders people. We all know one. I love the Usambara Mountains, which is in the northeastern part as well. So for people who they want the safari, but they also like birds, obviously you can see birds on safari. I mean, there's birds everywhere, obviously, but I think Usambara Mountains are just a really cool place. I mean, the geography is amazing. Topography is amazing there as well, but it's really known for its birding. I'm sure it's like a lot of places that are really good for birding. It's part of a migratory route. It's just a unique part of the country, I think, as well. And then if you were like, as the crow flies, keep going north, is when you hit like the Tsavo area of Kenya, which is much drier. So I think it's just a really beautiful part of the country, the Usambara Mountains, especially if for some people who are potentially driving. I mean, and a lot of people might do that between Dar and Arusha, Kilimanjaro area. It's on the way. I don't know how many people will be doing that, but it's definitely worth for anybody who would be considering that. It's definitely a beautiful part of the country. And then another place I always like to plug, because it doesn't get enough love, is Lake Natron, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, Chris.
I recognize the name, but I couldn't put it on a map.
So it's kind of in that, I guess it's that rectangle, maybe, between Kilimanjaro, Arusha, and the Serengeti and Ngorongoro area.
Okay.
Lake Natron, it's an alkaline lake. Not a ton of stuff grows or lives in it. It's known for its abundant bird life. It's a very important breeding ground for, I believe it's the lesser flamingo.
Okay.
Flamingos are the birds to see there, but it's because of its alkalinity and the organisms that grow and those that don't grow in there, it can be amazing shades of pinks and reds and oranges.
Okay.
And then you have in the background, you've got your like Empikai crater, the old volcanic craters there. And there's a camp there just on the banks of Lake Natron. And there you can do these Rift Valley treks, which are like 3-4-5 day treks all throughout the old craters around Lake Natron. And of course, see the bird life. And it's just a I'm not a big trekker. My husband did Kilimanjaro, and I like being outside. I like hiking, but I don't want to do it for 8 days straight uphill. So for some people who are like, I like doing outdoorsy stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I climbed Nyiragongo in DRC and that was incredible, but I don't want to do that for 8 days. One day was good for me. So, but people who do want to do active stuff in the area, but maybe aren't, it's either not their jam to do Kilimanjaro or they just don't necessarily have that in them for whatever reason, no judgment. I am that person as well. The hikes around the craters there are pretty incredible. And you can see Kilimanjaro in the background. And it's just, it's a lovely place, which could easily be tacked on to a regional safari in that area as well. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's right outside of Arusha. So I always like to plug those two places because they don't get enough love. And of course, Ruwaha and the Salu and the southern area. I always like to spread people out and spread the tourism dollars out as well, especially sure. going forward post-COVID world. So.
Excellent. Well, let's start to get to some of our wrap-up questions here.
Sure. Speed round.
Exactly. This is the bonus round. If you're standing in the prettiest spot in Western Tanzania, let's limit it to that. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
That's tricky. Okay. So I would probably be standing on a boat in the middle of Lake Tanganyika, maybe not in the middle, but off the shore, and looking at the Mahale Park, the mountains there. It's just, like I said, it's in the top five probably most beautiful places that I've seen. It's a spectacular view. It's peaceful. It's green. It's lush. It's paradise.
Excellent. And one thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Tanzania.
Oh, I don't even know where to start. I mean, I've got lots of Tanzania stories, but one thing that was kind of incredible when I was there at Mahale at this camp, I was chatting with some of the other guests there. I think there were only five other people there at the time. I think that total you can have there 12 maybe, but chatting and, oh, this couple's from San Francisco and, oh, where do you live? What do you do? Blah, blah, blah. And through this dinner conversation, we realized that some of their good friends are my husband's cousin, which is like, he used to live in North Carolina from Virginia and now live in San Francisco. And they're like, they know each other really well. But it was like, what the hell are you doing all the way out here? You know what I mean? Like one person from North Carolina or wherever out in the middle of nowhere, but then just to find this connection so far away in such a remote area. Yeah. Other than that, I think maybe just something that has to do with the language. I was waiting for you to ask me what you should eat. And so one thing I was going to say were, anytime you're in Tanzania, you should get Chipsy My Eye, which I don't know if you've ever had them.
I don't think so. I don't know what we're talking about.
So Chipsy is the English Swahili word for chips. So sure. French fries. Mm-hmm. And then My Eye are eggs. So it's like this fried goodness of French fries and eggs that no one ever really knows what they're getting when they order it. But it's, I think probably just the language itself is, I mean, Swahili is an amazing language, but probably just linguistic challenges.
You mentioned the language. Some of the things that were funny for me about the language is it's a pidgin language. It was invented as a trading language mm-hmm. or came about as a trading language. And so it doesn't always have the depth in terms of number of words of vocabulary, which makes it easier to learn. The Absolutely. Grammar is more simple. But for instance, I'm a computer programmer. So Ines, I'm a computer fundi, yeah. which is like, I'm a computer programmer, technician, mechanic. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I do computer stuff. They're really kind of all in the same word cloud there. One of the things that's funny. And I also, but one of the things I loved about the language is that the word for stranger and the word for guest are the same word. Mm-hmm. And it just, like you, I tell people you go to Tanzania for the animals and you come back for the people that I, mm-hmm. even though I give people a hard time when they say, what surprised you when you went someplace and, well, the people are so friendly. It's like, no, we should not be surprised by that anymore. But Tanzania,
that's true.
I was there, and you can go back way, way back in the archives of Amateur Traveler and listen to a two-part episode on my trip to Tanzania as a guest and Tanzania as a tourist, I think is what I called it. And one was basically doing a volunteer trip there, and the other one was the 3 days that we spent out on safari, and a very different experience. But it was that time that we spent with the local people there that really made me have a fondness in my heart for the country.
Yeah, no, it really is. Like I said, there's plenty of places that everyone's like, oh, people are so nice and hospitable. And I've been places where I'm like, they say that, but I'm not feeling it right now. But I think it has to do with all of the things that you just said, that culture of welcoming people. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been so many different people who've stepped foot, especially in the Swahili coast area over the centuries, mm-hmm. that has just made it a really rich, culturally rich place as well. And made the language what it is, which is can be very playful at times. I think like gypsies and Computa, ways that they Swahiliize an Anglican word is very playful as well. And I think that just kind of goes into the whole culture of Tanzanians, East Africans in general, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Excellent. If you had to summarize your visit to Tanzania, specifically mm-hmm. these Western parks, in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
Alive.
Okay.
Wild. I know I've used wild.
You've used it. It would have been disappointed really if you had not used it here.
Yeah. Okay. And that was the one I was struggling to come up with. I really need a thesaurus, clearly. And verdant.
Okay. Versus when we're out on the plains in Tanzania.
I know.
The other parts
is
a little more.
I realized that I was thinking more about Mahale.
Yep.
But in Katavi, you've got the confluence of, I think, three river mm-hmm. areas. So at times, and if you're in the right spot, it can be quite verdant as well. So I'm sticking.
I'm not trying to talk you out of it. Our guest again has been Jen Curran. And if you go to globeandtribe.com, you can certainly book a trip with Jen. But do you have any resources there for someone who is looking for more information about Tanzania?
I don't specifically have yet information on Tanzania, though I am considering putting more information up about some of my favorite places, such as Mahale, Ruaha, etc.
Well, how about this? If you do put that on your site, then send me an email and we'll link to it from the show notes.
Okay, that sounds great.
Excellent. Well, Jen, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Tanzania.
Thank you, Chris, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I'd like to thank all the people who help support Amateur Traveler on Patreon. You too can help support the show, get an ad-free version of the show and a monthly Zoom call, as well as some tchotchkes for higher levels of commitment. Go to patreon.com/amateur traveler. I was encouraged by a couple recent reviews I had in Apple Podcasts from 5K Runner Boy, the podcast I had been looking for. I had been looking for a good travel podcast for a while when I finally stumbled upon the Amateur Traveler. It was exactly what I was looking for with its easygoing nature and wide variety of destinations. I've enjoyed listening to episodes about places I've been and reminiscing on those trips while listening to episodes to help plan new adventures in the future. Keep doing what you're doing, Chris. This show is great. Thanks so much. And then I also heard from Dancing Mama, who said, best and most consistent travel podcast. I haven't been able to find a better travel podcast than Mr. Christensen's. He has an extensive podcast that grows even more every Saturday. It's my go-to podcast whenever I get that bit of wanderlust. It's fun to listen to in the car, on a walk, or when I'm on my Echelon bike. I listen especially intently when I'm traveling to a location that he has podcasted on. He is great in his knowledge of the locations and their history. Thank you, Chris. You are so welcome. Although I have to say that even my father won't answer to Mr. Christensen. He will say that that's his father. So I think the last person who would respond to Mr. Christensen died in 1989. So Chris is fine. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have a question, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.